This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
In the past few weeks of Shiurim, we've been discussing the concept of the way the Ribbono Shel Olam creates a situation of indebtedness towards humanity through the mechanism of Yisurin Shel Ahava, through causing a tzaddik to suffer undeservedly. He creates a situation where when the tzaddik meets him, he meets him as a creditor meets a debtor. And he is able to look the Ribbono Shel Olam in the face, so to say, with a degree of dignity and pride. This evening we're going to analyze that concept a little further in trying to understand the nature of that mechanism. It seems a rather primitive mechanism on the surface, that the Ribbono Shel Olam should choose to create indebtedness by inflicting undeserved pain and suffering on people. That seems an odd way to do things. And in so doing, we're also going to understand something of the nature of tefillah, and particularly the type of tefillah that we engage in during the period that now confronts us, Elul and Rosh Hashanah, the Aseres Yemei Tshuva, and Yom Kippur. On the question of tefillah, how tefillah works, how does prayer work? How can we, through the power of prayer, change the way the Ribbono Shel Olam is acting towards us? If the Ribbono Shel Olam has decided that we are deserving of certain treatment, how is it possible that through tefillah we can alter the Ribbono Shel Olam's attitude? And I've previously quoted to you from the 18th chapter of the 4th Maimer of the Sefer HaIkrim, where he deals with that question. And that will be our starting point this evening. He says, amongst other things, Hagzeiros Ha'elukius, the decrees of Hashem, Hein Heino Biheyos Hamakabel Bahachono Umadrego Yudua, that is conditional to the recipient being at a particular level. Ve'im Tishtaneh Hamadrego Hahi, and if the recipient of that decree changes his level, then the gezeira will change, the decree will change. So Hashem's decrees are really like they're really programs. They're not set events. They're programs. If this will occur, then this will be the way he's treated. If this will occur, then this is the way he'll treat him. So a whole gradient is established depending on where he is. Uva'avur zehu she'omru, and that's why they said sheshinui Hashem yo'il levatel hagzeira. That's why when a person is chas v'sholem terribly ill, one of the things we do is we change his name. And the tefillah we say during the name changing is that if you have decreed certain things against so-and-so, this is no longer so-and-so, he's a new person. But adds the Ikrim, the most important part of that is the chen shinui ha-maise. If changing a person's name can help, so too can changing a person's deeds, changing his characteristics. And that's the essence of it, really, is to change his characteristics, not just to change his name. Umizeh atzad hu she'to'il ha'teshuva l'rosho, and that's how teshuva works. She'al yedei ha'teshuva hu ke'ilu nehepach l'ish ache. Through the process of teshuva, it's as if the person is changed into another human being, she'lo nigzer olav oso gzeira, upon whom that decree was not decreed. That really is the function of tshuva. And he carries on to bring various examples from Tanakh. Val ze aderech hu mevu'al she'to'il ha'tefila, or kishoron ha'maise. And that is also how tefila works, how prayer works, or improved action. El she'yuchon ha'mispalel lekabel shefo ha'to'iv o levatel mimenu hara ha'nigzor olov, by enabling a person to be receptive to new goodness or to cancel out decreed badness, By changing from a bad level to a finer level. And this claim Tzofar used when he blamed Iyev for not praying to Hashem, to save him from his suffering. And he didn't take the required steps to cancel the severity of the decree. Had Iyev turned to Hashem in prayer, it could have worked. And that shows how tefillah, how prayer, and improved action. He always puts the two together. It doesn't help just to be mispalel. It has to be tefillah together with improved action. Will always help to cancel out a bad decree. And that's what Chazal have said in Gemara Rosh Hashanah. Yofet sa'akal odom bein kodim zadin bein la'achak zadin. It helps to shout to Hashem, whether it's before the decree or after the decree. It's always good. You might ask, says the Ikrim, how can prayer change Hashem's decree? How can we change God's mind through tefillah? Because that was Hashem's original intention, that the decree should apply to him if he is at a particular level. But if his level changes, the decree will change. That's how Hashem decrees, that's how he institutes the decree. It's not a blanket thing that this is the decree for so and so no matter what. This is the decree for so and so as he is. But as he develops and changes, the decree will change as well. And so tefillah has the effect of changing the subject, or changing the object of the decree. Not changing the subject. Hashem's mind doesn't change, and the decree doesn't change. The decree stays the same, and Hashem stays the same. All that has changed is it's not the same person anymore. The decree is no longer applicable to this person, because this person has undergone dramatic change through the process of tefillah. That's how the Ikrim explained the method, the mechanism of tefillah. Now, our difficulty with that is a medrash in Parshas Beshalach. In Parsha Chof Aleph, the Midrash says the following. Talking about Yisrael when they were standing at the Red Sea with the Egyptians behind them. Kivan Shiro Yisrael Shoyu Mukofi Migimu Ruchas. When the Jews saw that they were surrounded from three directions. Hayam Soige, the sea was closing in on them in front. Bahasune Roidev, and the enemy was behind. Bahachayus Min Amidbo. And on the sides they had all the wild animals from the midbar. Tolu einehem la'avim shebashamayim v'tzoaku la'kodesh baruch. They rested their eyes on their Father in heaven, and they cried to him. V'lama osa kodesh baruch lehem kach. Why did Hashem do that? What was the purpose of that torture? They had just come through the whole event of Yetzias Mitzrayim. They're finally they're on their way out. Why again? Leave them alone already. Let them go. That says the Medrash, Hashem craved their tefillah. Which implies they did nothing wrong to deserve that. They did nothing. This was not a punishment. There was no reason that they should have gone through those moments of anguish other than Hashem wanted to hear them cry. Hashem wanted to hear them shout. And the Medrash goes on with a moshel. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Lamad Ola Domeh, says Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, what can this be compared to? The Melech Shohu Yo Bo Bederech, a king who was traveling along the road, V'hoi So Bas Melochim Tzoekes Loi, and he's traveling and he hears a beautiful princess crying out to him, B'vakosha Mimcho Atzilenim Yad Alistim, please prince, save me from these robbers. Shoma HaMelech V'Yitzilo. The king goes and he saves her from them. V'acha Yomim Bikesh Liso Yiso, later on he proposed to her. And he wanted her to speak to him, to communicate to him, but she didn't. So what did the king do? Giro bo halisti. She hired the gangsters back again to go and attack her, so that she should cry out, and the king will hear. Kivan shebo ale halisti mitchila tzoekes lemelech. When the robbers came, she once again shouted to the king. Amalah HaMelech said, the king, the kacho yisi misavu lishma akhilech, that's what I wanted to hear. wanted to hear, here you need me again. I just wanted to hear you shout again. It's like the men say to the women's libbers. All we want to hear is that you need us again. That's all. That's all we need to hear. And the women are saying, we don't need you. We're managing fine without you. So what do the men do? They do nothing. But here the man just tells you what you're supposed to do when the women are managing fine without you. Turn on the screws a little bit. Turn on the screws until they shout and they need you. Then you've got a relationship again. But what does it mean? What kind of games is the Ribbono Shel Olam playing? There's the story with the prince and the princess. That's a game. Is that the kind of game that the Ribbono Shel Olam plays with us? That he's willing to put a whole nation through terrible anguish because he wants to hear them shout? He wants to hear it. What kind of sadistic behavior is this? That the Ribbono Shel Olam takes pleasure in hearing us cry. So every now and again he turns on the pressure and makes us cry. If human beings would do that, we wouldn't. It's not a nice thing to do. To go and hurt other people to make them cry. But there's a reason why the Medrash compares it to that particular relationship. And that is, it's not for sadistic reasons that the prince takes pleasure in hearing the princess cry. The pleasure that the prince takes in that is one of his own ego building. He feels important. She needs him. And that's part of the inherent necessary communication and relationship in the husband-wife relationship. The male needs to feel needed. And as I said when somebody asked the question last week at the Shabbaton, he needs to feel needed not by a nebuchadnezzar. He needs to feel needed not by somebody who can't cope. That doesn't make him feel important unless he's a nebuchadnezzar also. If he's also a nebuchadnezzar, then it's fine that he marries a girl who's a nebuchadnezzar, and the two of them carry on life together as nebuchadnezzars. But if he's not, if he's a person of some degree of stature and he has some character and personality, then he wants to be needed by somebody who is substantial. And the more independent and substantial the person is who needs him, the more he feels, the more his ego is built. And we've discussed previously that this male ego building is not negative. That this male ego building is not something that is to be decried as chauvinistic and all the rest of it. It's an essential requirement in the dynamics of the husband-wife relationship. If that ego isn't being nourished at all times, the marriage isn't being nourished. The dynamics cannot be nourished. He cannot do what he has to do unless that ego is built. And people realize that in most relationships. If you want to get the best out of your employees, you have to build them up. You have to make them feel important. There's a limit to the extent to which you can hammer at a person and still get productivity out of him. But when one builds a person, when one builds a person's ego, one's able to, if he's a person who has the potential, one's able to get a great deal more out of them. And so it is, that's something that we understand in our normal relationships, and it applies certainly in the husband-wife relationship. But that self-esteem, perhaps let's not call it ego because it has such negative connotations, but the self-esteem of the husband has to be constructed and has to be nurtured. And there's nobody who plays a more important role in that than the wife, provided she herself is a person of character and some degree of stature, and that she knows how to communicate that to him. And that's this moment of pleasure that the king has. He's driving along the road, and all of a sudden there's this beautiful damsel in distress, and she needs him, and he wants to recapture that moment. He felt so good at that time that he wants to recapture that moment, and he's willing to put her through that suffering in order to recapture the moment. The Ribbono Shel Olam, we've discussed previously, has designed a system whereby he can become, so to say, kibiyochel, indebted to us. That even if a person is a tzaddik, we said at best, by being a tzaddik you're merely restoring equilibrium. A tzaddik doesn't do anything more than Hashem has done for him. So how can a tzaddik ever get to a point where kibiyochel Hashem owes him something? So we said through suffering. If in addition to being a tzaddik he has also suffered undeservedly, then Hashem owes him. He owes him for the suffering. But our question this evening is, that sadism? That's not the way. That's not godly. to make somebody, to hurt somebody so that you can create the indebtedness. That's not the solution. It's far more sophisticated than that. The Ribbono Shel Olam attaches his kovod to our actions. That's the inherent mechanism. That we can build the kovod of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that is the essential concept of kovod. Kovod is our interdependence on one another for self-esteem. Self-esteem is not something that one can develop on one's own. It's all very well, yes, one wants to try and be independent and have one's own self-esteem from one's own actions and so on, but at the end of the day, one needs feedback. If everything one does is ignored, if everything one does is not responded to, if nothing that one does is in any way received gratefully, if one doesn't feel the echo of one's voice, if one doesn't feel something coming back to one, then it's very difficult, if not impossible, to build self-esteem. And that we need to acknowledge that the, as I said last week also at the Shabbaton, one goes through the stages. The first stage is dependence, where a baby is dependent on its parents and on its environment. Then one goes through the adolescent stage of independence, where the child tries to establish his own personality, his own character, and his independence from his parents and his environment. And later on comes the most mature phase of all, which is the status of interdependence, where people realize that there is no such thing as being independent and there's no such thing as being dependent. That self-esteem is developed not through being independent. Self-esteem is developed through being interdependent. I need you and you need me. And that way we can build each other's self-esteem. There has to be interrelationship for self-esteem to be built. And that's what kovod means, to be mechabed somebody. Why is there so much emphasis in the halacha and in the Torah, in the Bein Odom Lechaveiro, to be mechabed es habriyos, to honor people, to show kovod for people. People need that kovod. If they didn't need that kovod, there would be no mitzvah to give them that kovod. People need dignity. People need respect. People need self-esteem. And that's something we have to give them. And the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world in such a way that others' self-esteem is in our hands. That's the koach, that's the power He's given us. The ability to destroy people's esteem and the ability to construct people's esteem. But the Ribbono Shel Olam has gone much further. And He's also given us the ability to, so to say, kibiyochel, build His esteem. To be mechabed the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's what it means. That's what it means to be mechabed the Ribbono Shel Olam. Does He need our kovod? In a sense, yes. He has created the world in such a way that interdependence extends even to Him, so to say. That even the Ribbono Shel Olam is interdependent rather than independent. Of course, in essence, He's independent. But He has chosen, in order that we should not be totally dependent, in order that we should be able to develop self-esteem, we have to be able to give self-esteem. A person who cannot give self-esteem cannot have self-esteem. Ezehu mechubod hamechabed es habriyus. What is the greatest source of self-esteem? When you can give esteem to others. There's nothing more potent than to realize that you can make other people feel important, because that shows how valuable you are to them. When you compliment somebody, when you say something nice to somebody, and their face lights up, what does that mean to you? That means that was terribly important to that person. Why was it important? If I'm a nobody, if I'm a nothing, why did he respond so to my compliment? So the greatest form of kovod, the greatest form of self-esteem, comes from being mechabed es habriyos. When you show respect to others and they give you feedback, and they respond with acknowledgement and with appreciation, there is nothing that gives so much esteem to oneself as the dishing out of esteem to other people and measuring the response that you get from giving them that esteem. And what then if we give esteem to the Ribbono Shel Olam? If we mechabed the Ribbono Shel Olam? And being mechabed the Ribbono Shel Olam is not just an illusion. The fact that we have the ability to be mechabed the Ribbono Shel Olam means to say, kibayochel again, so to say, the Ribbono Shel Olam has constructed it in such a way that He in fact appreciates and responds to the esteem we give Him. We can exalt Him. Not in His essence, of course. We can't change that. But we can exalt the way He comes across. We can exalt the way He's seen by others. We can exalt the way he is operative in the world. That's where we can build the esteem, so to say, of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And when we see that we can have an effect on the Ribbono Shel Olam, that gives us a great self-esteem. And so where does the woman's self-esteem come from? When she sees how he values the esteem she shows to him, then she realizes how important she is. And begins to see and to understand the dynamics of it all. If she's a valued person and a valuable person, and she shows him esteem, He feels good. This princess needs me. She shouts out for me. Only I can help her. I'm the only person in her life that makes me feel good. And if I display that feeling of how good I feel at the fact that you need me, how much good does that make the wife feel? That he tackled, I didn't realize how much he appreciates the fact that I need him. Who am I after all? I must be somebody special. Otherwise, why would it be so important to him? And so the dynamics goes, and it's a circle. She responds, he responds, she responds, he responds, and that's how it goes. And so it is in all relationships. And that's what that medrash means. That when the king turns on the pressure onto the damsel in order to get her to shout out, that's not because he wants to hurt her. That's not because he takes sadistic pleasure in hearing her cry. That's because she gives her the opportunity to make him feel good, to build his self-esteem. And that's the essence of their relationship. There needs to be that dynamic. There needs to be that. Where that stops, the whole relationship stops. And so it is with Ribbono Shel Olam. That when the Bnei Yisrael came out of Mitzrayim, he wanted to give them the opportunity to exalt him, to make him, so to say, feel great. By the way, they still need him. Even though they're out of Mitzrayim, they still need him. And if they had carried on with that, with their tefillah, he wouldn't have had to bring the Egyptians after them. Just as if this woman had carried on needing her husband, he wouldn't have had to turn the screws on. But perhaps the Midrash is telling us that that's the way life is. That the fact is, we don't cry when we're not sore. We don't need people when we're feeling independent. And the Ribbono Shel Olam has to turn the screws on every now and again. He cannot leave it to us to cry out voluntarily every now and again. We don't do it. It's against human nature to cry when you're feeling comfortable. So what's the Ribbono Shel Olam going to do? On the one hand, he wants us to feel comfortable. So he makes us comfortable. The moment we feel comfortable, a distance develops between us and him. We stop turning to him. So he's got to turn the screws on again so that we're able to be mispalel. And perhaps so it is in human relations too, as tragic as that is. But it's perhaps important, and that we'll have to discuss some other time, it's a different subject, in the marital relationship too. On the one hand, a husband loves his wife and wants to make her feel comfortable. But if he goes too far, he can make her feel so comfortable that she doesn't need him. And if she doesn't need him, he might think he's been the most wonderful husband. But in fact, she starts getting bored. And he starts getting bored. And they can't figure out what's going on. Everything's so fine. I love her. I give her everything she wants. And you can't imagine in how many situations of marital counseling, that's exactly the story. Where both say, we don't know why we're not happy. Because we have nothing to complain about. But we're not happy. And sometimes that's all that's happened. She is so happy that she doesn't need him. And he is so lonely because she doesn't need him. And they don't know what to do. And there comes a time where the counseling has to be, you've got to start making her a little less comfortable. She's got to feel that kind of dependence in a sense. She's got to feel that kind of need. And then there's relationship. Then there's something. Then there's a dynamic. And so it is between us and the Ribbono Shel Olam. And so it works then that this concept of Yisurin Shel Ahava, of undeserved suffering, is not as an end in itself. It's not because the suffering creates the indebtedness. There's a link in between. The suffering creates tefillah. The tefillah exalts the esteem of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and for that he becomes indebted to us. That's the system of indebtedness. Not just that the suffering itself creates indebtedness. But you can have a tzaddik as a result of which there's equilibrium. The Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't want equilibrium, so he introduces a degree of suffering which brings the tzaddik to tefillah. And Misaveh HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Tfilosun Shel Tzadikim, the Ribbono Shel Olam craves the tefillah of a tzaddik. So that means by being mispalel, by responding with tefillah, by responding with davening, the tzaddik is in fact fulfilling Hashem's needs, so to say. Misaveh, the Ribbono Shel Olam has a taiva, has a craving for it. That's just like a person has a craving, kibyochel, if one can understand that. A man comes home and has a craving for a certain dish. He's dying for it. And his wife goes to a great deal of effort to prepare it. So there's indebtedness. That's just what I felt like, just what I wanted. How did you know what I wanted? It's wonderful. It's a craving for it, a table. The Ribbono Shel Olam has a craving for us to need him. And the greater we are, the more he craves us to need him. Just like a man doesn't want a shlemiel of a wife to need him, that doesn't make him feel good. He feels good when an important wife needs him, when an ishur chashuva, an ishur chayil needs him, then he feels important. But when she acts like an ebechel, that doesn't make him, that doesn't build his self-esteem in any way. So it is with Ribbono Shel Olam, so to say. He wants us to need him, but who does he want to need him? Not the little people. He wants the great people to need him. So the greater we become, the more we become tzaddikim, the more he wants us to need him. But the tzaddikim are becoming more independent of him, so to say. They're establishing equilibrium, they're paying him back. He needs to turn on the screws for the tzaddikim, so that they should once again cry in need for him. That satisfies his craving and makes the Ribbono Shel Olam indebted to them for once again needing him, for satisfying that craving. That's the mechanism that is used. And that's what lies behind this ikrim. That through tefillah we change our status. Not just by a recognition that everything comes from Hashem. That's the way it's normally understood. When we daven, we are expressing the recognition of Ein Oid Milvado. There is nothing other than the Ribbono Shel Olam. The source of all goodness and salvation comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam. And by expressing and acknowledging that, we raise our own levels. We're now going further than that. We're saying what the ikrim means is more than that. That even a tzaddik who knows inevitably and without having to do this, Ein Oid Milvado, nevertheless, by davening he satisfies a craving of Hashem. And the satisfying of that craving of Hashem brings him closer to Hashem. He is giving Hashem something which nobody else can give him. He is giving the Ribbono Shel Olam a pleasure which is not achievable in any other way. And that relationship brings the intimacy. Just as when the king gets the gangsters to molest the girl and she shouts out for him, that brings an intimacy between them. Tefillah is not just the expression of intimacy. Tefillah is the cause of intimacy. Tefillah results in an intimacy between man and God that cannot be achieved any other way. That being the case, the question was asked of me recently, how does tefillah work then for other people? How does it help if I pray for somebody else? If the way that tefillah works as the ikrim is that by davening I change my status. And the decree which applied to me previously no longer applies to me now. That I understand. But if somebody else is suffering, and I pray for him, so my status might be changing because I'm getting close to Hashem. But why does Hashem change the decree for the other person? It's interesting that the closing Midrashim on Sefer Iyuv, which we finished with the ladies today, are based on a pasuk in our Sedra today. V'nosan l'cho rachamim v'richam chol v'hirbecho. After the Torah tells us that after being instructed to wipe out an irani dachas, if a city has turned to idolatry, then we have to wipe out the whole city. And as a result of that, at the end of that, it says, and Hashem will give you mercy and have mercy on you. And the Midrash says in the Yalkut at the end of Iyuv, Siman zeh yeheh biyadcho, Kol zman she'ato rachman, whenever you are merciful, harachaman yerachem olecho, Hashem will be merciful on you. That all relates to Iyuv because at the end of Sefer Iyuv, the friends are told by Hashem that they have been improper in their treatment of Iyuv, and they have to bring sacrifices, and Iyuv will pray for them. And after that it says, and Hashem gave Iyuv a great deal of wealth, he restored his earlier situation and gave him a great deal of happiness and wealth. And the Gemara says as a result of that, Kol ha-mevakesh racham im al-chaveiro v'hutzorich lo yisadova hu nane tchilo. Anybody who asks for mercy for his friend, and he needs the same thing, he gets answered first. And the proof is also brought from Avrom Avinu. You'll remember Avrom and Avimelech have an argument. Avimelech wants to take sorrow, and Hashem smites the household of Avimelech with certain diseases which result also in the barrenness of his whole household. Nobody can have children. And after it's all resolved, and Avimelech says, I didn't realize she was your wife, and so on, Avimelech does tshuva. Avrom prays for Avimelech. Avimelech's household is healed, and right after that Sora has her, the section comes where Sora gives birth to. So we see from there that praying for somebody else helps the person who's praying. That part is still okay. That fits into the theme of the Ikrim. I pray for somebody else, that elevates me. As a result of my being elevated, the Ribbono Shel Olam changes the decree on me. I understand that. But how does it help the other person? It doesn't say that anybody who prays for somebody else is answered, is only he is answered. It says, Ne'emet Chilo, he gets answered first, but afterwards the other person also gets answered. How does that work? What is Rachamin? The phrase that is used here all the time in these Midrashim. Calls man she'ato Rachman, Rachman yurachim alecha. If you are merciful, Hashem will be merciful to you. If you mevakesh Rachamim, if you ask for mercy for your friend, then Hashem will doesn't say just hamispalel, a particular phrase in this particular chazal is kol hamevakesh rachamim. It uses a particular phrase for davening. Anybody who asks Hashem for mercy on his friend, if he needs that, he'll be answered first. What does rachamim mean? So rachamim has at its root the word reish ches mem, which is rechem, a womb. Rachamim is the ability to feel at one with another human being. A mother responds to the suffering of a child not as to the suffering of another human being, but as to her own suffering. She feels the suffering of a child. She cannot tolerate the suffering of a child, which is one of the reasons that she is a bad disciplinarian, as we've often mentioned before. She is unable, she should be unable, it's against her nature to discipline the child. She would have to be sadistic. It's like, or masochistic rather. It's like hitting yourself. If your person's trying to give up the habit of smoking, every time his hand reaches out for a cigarette, he takes the burning stub and he stubs it in his hand. It's not the normal way. One doesn't do that. Not the way one does it. So for a mother to punish a child, it's like punishing herself. It's like hurting herself. It's against her nature. Because that's what rachamim is. Rachamim is the absolute of identification with another person, empathy with another person, to the point where one is able to feel their suffering as if it is one's own. We asked in the ladies' shiur this morning, if suffering is a route to such elevation, if through suffering we're able to indebt God, we should go about looking for ways to suffer. Is there a mechanism that we can use to increase our own suffering in a way which is not abnormal, which is not sick? And the answer is yes. We do that through Mosei Ba'olim Chaveiro, the ability to share somebody else's suffering. That the Ribbono Shel Olam has created us all with such a connectedness, has created us all with such a common link, that we are able to in fact share not only each other's property, but we're able to share each other's emotions too. And the sharing of emotions is the most important form of communication that exists between people. And what we're finding happening today is exactly the opposite, where we are substituting concepts and words for emotions. And we are communicating with each other verbally, and we are communicating with each other intellectually, but we're not communicating with each other emotionally. And that leaves people feeling very alienated and feeling very lonely. People do not solve their feelings of alienation and loneliness through mental and intellectual and verbal communication. People feel solace in emotional communication. And emotional communication is supplemented and complemented by verbal communication, but it is not essentially verbal communication. We can share each other's joys. It's a wonderful thing. I've mentioned it before in the shiurim, that there is no limit to the amount of simcha, to the amount of joy a person can have in his life, provided he'll develop the capacity to share other people's simcha. If the only time you have simcha is when it's your own, then there's a limit to how much simcha you can have. You can have a couple of bar mitzvahs, you can have a couple of chasanas, but there's a limit to how much simcha you can have. A few business successes, a couple of parties, what is there at the end of it? How many simchas can you have? But if one has the capacity to feel joy in somebody else's joy, as if it is one's own, then there's no limit to how much simcha you can have. Because there's always somebody having a simcha somewhere. Likewise, if one has developed the capacity to share somebody else's sorrow and suffering, then there is no limit to how much suffering one can find for oneself if one wants to. And it's the kind of suffering which is healthy. To seek direct suffering is unhealthy, that's sick. To go and punish oneself, that's masochistic, that's not healthy, that's not normal. But to participate in other people's suffering, to the level that one is able, different people have different capacities, but to the level that one is able to participate in somebody else's suffering, that's something which enables one to suffer in a normal sort of way, if one feels it oneself. What does it mean to be mevakesh rachamim al chaveiro? To be mevakesh rachamim al chaveiro is to say to the Ribbono Shel Olam, basically, okay, Ribbono Shel Olam, I don't know what you've got against him, and I'm not interested in what you've got against him, but he's suffering, and when he suffers it hurts me. What have you got against me? That's what we're asking. I'm part of him. It's like saying, don't worry, I'm hurting your arm, I'm giving your heart an attack. I'm not attacking you, it's just your heart. You relax, got nothing against you. That's not the way it is. It's one body. So Klal Yisrael is one body. And it doesn't help me to say that you're bringing suffering to him, Ribbono Shel Olam. That suffering on him is causing me aggravation, it's causing me agmas nefesh. And I'm mispalil to you, Ribbono Shel Olam, exactly the same way as I would be mispalil if it was I who was the object of the suffering. Because I am the object of the suffering. And just as if I am the object of the suffering, you would alleviate the suffering through the mechanism of tefillah which we've just discussed. So I'm asking you to alleviate the suffering now. But the only way you can alleviate my suffering is to alleviate his suffering as well. We almost blackmail the Ribbono Shel Olam for the sake of the other person. And we say you can't isolate a human being and cause him to suffer only. The fact that his suffering is causing us all aggravation, and we want to address that aggravation that we're being caused through his suffering. The result of rachamim, the result of the ability to feel mercy, to identify, to sympathize and empathize, is the ability to treat other people's suffering as one's own, and to turn to the Ribbono Shel Olam in a request to remove the cause of the suffering which we are feeling, not which he's feeling, the suffering which we are feeling, to have that removed. And that way, it can be unnecessary for us to be caused that suffering directly. Imagine if the damsel in the Medrash would have turned to the king and have said, look, I'm comfortable, I don't have a problem, but so-and-so is suffering, and I love so-and-so, and their suffering is causing me aggravation, and I need you to stop that person's suffering so that I don't get so aggravated. And the king would have been satisfied with that too. She needs me. She doesn't need me to alleviate her own suffering, but she does need me to alleviate her own suffering, because she sympathizes and identifies with that person to such a degree that she's suffering as a result of it. And she realizes that I'm the only one that can save her. And he would be able to save her, he would save her then without having to bring the gangsters onto her specifically. And therefore, when a person is mevakesh rachamim al chaveiro, when a person asks for mercy on his friend, firstly, the friend will be helped. But who na'ane t'chilo? Of course, if he needs the same thing. Let's say a particular person is suffering from terrible poverty. But that's not what hurts him so much as the fact that somebody else is suffering the poverty. And he turns to Hashem in prayer for the other person. Ribbono Shel Olam, that person is suffering such poverty, and that suffering is causing me to suffer. Clearly, the Ribbono Shel Olam has to remove the suffering of that person. But there's no point in removing the suffering of that person while the original person, the one who's davening, remains poor. He's got to do both. That means that this person is being hurt by the suffering of poverty, his own and somebody else's. And it all has to be removed. And so this rachamim, this ability to sympathize, connects us up with one another in such a way that we can become responsible for one another, and through our own elevation we can achieve the same effects of suffering through somebody else's suffering as we would through our own suffering. Just as we are able to achieve the same effects as of somebody else's through somebody else's joy as we would through our own joy, so we are able to feel the effects of somebody else's suffering as if it was our own suffering. And since suffering brings us to need Hashem, other people's suffering can also bring us to need Hashem. And that satisfies the Ribbono Shel'olam's taiva. That satisfies the Ribbono Shel'olam's craving for our tefillah. The fact that we feel that. And so, again, yes, the Ribbono Shel'olam craves our tefillah. And the greater we become, the more he craves our tefillah, the more he craves us to need him. And he has to turn on the screws in order to make us need him, because when we're comfortable, we don't need him. But we don't have to have the screws turned on to ourselves. If we're able to sympathize, we can turn on the screws by feeling somebody else's hardship and responding to that in such a way that he doesn't have to turn on the screws to us. And now let's take that one step further. One of the underlying themes of our Rosh Hashanah Davni is Kerachem Aval Bonim Ken Terachem Oleinu. We say to the Slichas day in and day out, as a father has mercy on sons, so you should have mercy on us. What does that mean? We're davening for mercy, we're asking for mercy, for rachamim. And here too we see, Kol zman she'ato rachamon, harachamon yirachim alecha. As long as you are merciful, Hashem will be merciful to you. What is this mercy? What are we saying to Hashem? Once we have shown ourselves capable of mercy, the principle is that then the Ribbono Shel Olam acts with mercy to us. The Or HaChaim, for example, says on this pasuk in our Sedra, "Shekol zman sha'odom hu begeder teva achzori," for as long as a man is naturally cruel. And achzar comes from the word zar. Zar means estranged, alienated, the opposite of rachamim. Rachamim is to feel the attachment that a mother feels to a child. And achzar is to feel this estrangement of two people who don't feel attached to one another. As long as a person feels, is naturally cruel, k'moy kein yisnayeg Hashem imoy, so the Ribbono Shel Olam will react to us. She'ein Hashem merachim elo l'racham. Hashem only shows mercy to a merciful person. Only to one who can identify with others does Hashem show this mercy. Now, what does this mercy mean? It leads us into an incredible concept. I know now what it is to feel suffering at somebody else's tzora. Once I've developed that capacity, I know what it is. And I realize how I can suffer as much as the other person can suffer. That's the ultimate of sympathy and identity, to feel like a mother does with a child, to feel as much pain and suffering as the other person does. And how much pain and suffering does a parent feel? There's that beautiful piece of Tanakh where Avshalom rebels against his father David. And David goes through a horrendous time. Avshalom plants himself outside the palace, and when anybody comes for judgment, he says to them, "Ma'ezer irato, where do you come from?" And they tell him. And then he says, "Tell me, what have you come? What shaila have you come to ask? What's your problem?" And they tell Avshalom the problem. He says, "Ooh, what you say is wonderful. You've got a very strong case. It's a pity the king might not understand exactly what the strength of your case. Pity, you know, David's getting old, my father's getting older. He might not fully perceive it. You've got a very strong case." And then he used to say, "Mi yisimeni shofet ba'oretz." If I were the judge in the land, I would give you everything you're asking for. Like all the politicians say when they're trying to get into power. "V'hoyo bikarov ish li'ishtachav yisloim." When anybody came to bow down to Avshalom, the sholach es yodoy, Avshalom extended his arm, the master diplomat, the hechez ikloy, and he held the arm of the other person, the noshak loy, and he kissed him. And Avshalom campaigned thus to all of Israel, that came to the king for mishpat. He gets them all at their weakest point. So two litigants come to the king. He says to both of them, before they go in, "What a strong case you've got. I would let you win." So the one who actually wins, what does he go out thinking? Okay, Avshalom is good and David is good. Avshalom has lost nothing. And the one who lost thinks, if Avshalom was king, I would have won. He is a man of understanding. He really understands me. So 50% of the litigants became firm supporters of Avshalom, and the other 50% became supporters of Avshalom. Either way, he treated them well. Vayeganev Avshalom eslev anshe Yisrael. And Avshalom stole the hearts of the people of Israel. One can steal a heart too. One can steal loyalty. And he goes on building up his... And it develops, and he gets all sorts of supporters. Important people start supporting him. And eventually he starts his rebellion. And the king left on foot, and all his household. That's David. And the king left 10 of his concubines to look after the palace. And off they went. And a small band of people follow him. David oile b'male hazesim, and David went up harazesim. Those of you who know the geography, you can see the situation there. He comes out of the old city down into the valley, up harazesim towards where the Intercontinental Hotel is now. Oile uvoiche, walking and crying. V'rosh loy chofu, his head bowed down. V'hu hoilech yochef, but he's walking barefoot. There's the king of Israel, leaving Yerushalayim with a small band of people, walking barefoot with his head down, crying every step he takes of the way. And so he goes and he walks, and he's lost such dignity that he finally encounters Shimi ben Gera. Yotsuya Makalil, walking across the desert towards the Jordan River, over the hills. Shimi ben Gera comes cursing as he walks. Vayasakil ba'avonim is David, throwing stones at David as he walks past. And so said Shimi as he cursed, "Tzei tzei ish adomim, get out of here, you man of blood, ish habli yoal, and you degenerate so and so, get out of here. Eishiv alecha Hashem kol demeve shol, Hashem has returned to you all the blood of the house of Shol which you caused to be spilt. Hashem alach tatav, and you took his kingdom away from you. Vayitin Hashem es hamluchu biyad Avshalom bonecho, and Hashem has given the kingdom to Avshalom your son. You are suffering because you're a man of blood, you're a murderer, you deserve to suffer." And Avishai wants to kill Shimei, and David says, "No, leave him alone." And so they go suffering, and off they go. Avshalom asks Achitophel, who's a supporter of his now, a very wise man, "What should we do now? The king has left. How do we establish our authority?" You've got to get the loyalty of the palace. So the first thing you have to do is you have to rape the concubines of your father. And all of Israel must hear how you've denigrated your father, how you've embarrassed him. And everybody will feel the strength of your rebellion. And they put a tent on the roof of the palace for Avshalom. And one by one he took each of the Pilagshim into the tent on the roof so that everybody could see what he was doing. The extent to which he undermined David HaMelech and disgraced him and embarrassed him. Then he plans a rebellion. He plans to go after his father, to kill his father. And David gets his band of people together and is able to turn the rebellion back against Avshalom. After all this, and the king commanded Yoav his general and Avishai and Ittai, saying, "We've got to recapture the land, we've got to conquer the rebellion. But when you find Avshalom, go easy on him. Just take it easy for my son Avshalom." It's a father for a child. Despite all the terrible things that he'd done, there's still a feeling, "I can't kill him." And everybody heard that. Later on, you know how the story goes, that Avshalom gets caught in his hair in the tree, and he is killed. And David is most distressed. And he cries, he mourns the loss of his son Avshalom. Vayal al Aliyas Hashar, and the king went up into the attic by the gate, Vayefk, and he cried. V'choy Omar belechtoy, and thus he said as he walked, B'ni Avshalom, my son Avshalom, B'ni Avshalom, O my son Avshalom. Miyitein Musi ani tachtecho Avshalom b'ni b'ni. If only I could have died in your place, Avshalom, my son. That's the rachamim of a father for a child. And that's what we're asking the Ribbono Shel Olam for. Kerachim aval bonim. But no matter what we've done against you, look what Avshalom did to David. And yet David is prepared to die in Avshalom's place. He can't take the death of his son. What does it mean? Having experienced what it is to suffer terrible pain because somebody else is suffering, we can now turn to the Ribbono Shel Olam and say, Ribbono Shel Olam, we deserve to suffer. But we know you're our Father. And we know what you're going to feel like if we suffer. You're going to feel like David HaMelech felt when Avshalom died. It's also a form of almost emotional blackmail towards the Ribbono Shel Olam. We feel embarrassed at the tsar we're going to cause you through the suffering you have to impose on us. In loy lemaaneinu, if you can't do it because of us, leman choaseh, do it for your own sake. If you can't save us for our sake, we understand that we don't deserve to be saved. But what about your suffering? If I am able to feel suffering because of my friend's suffering, why do I feel it? What is our connection? The connection is you. What connection do I have with my friend? The fact that he's also got the same neshama, that he's also created by you. So it's really a triangular relationship. My friend is your son and I am your son. And so we have this relationship, but then you are our father. And if I can feel pain at somebody else's suffering, how much more so must you feel pain at my suffering? So Ribbono Shel Olam, save me the embarrassment of knowing what pain I'm causing you by suffering, and spare me that suffering so that you won't suffer at my hands. The whole table is reversed, where we see that our own suffering is causing Ribbono Shel Olam to suffer. So the first line of defense, if that's the way we feel, is not to do the Avero. We shouldn't sin. If we don't sin, Hashem won't have to punish us. When we sin, we should feel, apart from the fear of our own punishment, more than that we should feel, but look how my father is going to have to suffer when he sees me suffering the punishment caused by my own deeds, the same as Avshalom. That suffering was caused by his own deeds, he deserved it. But had Avshalom known how his father would suffer, maybe Avshalom wouldn't have done what he did. That might have stopped him. Had he been able to have a picture of how his father was going to suffer after he was killed, maybe that could have stopped him. And if we could feel how Hashem suffers, so to say, because we're punished, that should stop us doing the Avera, because we don't want to cause that suffering. But where we've done the Avera already, it's already been done. Then it's Kerachem Aval Bonim Ribbono Shel Olam. Feel for us, don't cause us to suffer, not because we don't deserve it, we do deserve it. But by causing us to suffer, we will be causing you to suffer. And that we can't take. We can take our own suffering. But to take the thought that our own suffering will cause you to suffer, that we can't. And so, Leman Choaseh, for your own sake, Ribbono Shel Olam, have mercy upon us. That's a beautiful aspect of tefillah. To turn to the Ribbono Shel Olam's fatherly rachamim, because he is part of us, because he feels us so closely and so intimately, to plead to him not to punish us so that he doesn't suffer, not so that we don't suffer. It's an incredibly powerful tefillah. But you can't ask for that if you don't feel rachamim yourself. If you aren't fully aware of what it is to suffer at somebody else, to feel the pain of somebody else's suffering, you can't talk to the Ribbono Shel Olam in this line of saying, Ribbono Shel Olam, we're embarrassed about the pain we're causing you by our suffering. And we want to stop that. And we shouldn't have done the Avera in the first place, but having done it, we want you not to punish us so that we won't be responsible for your hurt. That's what we want. But if we're incapable of feeling hurt at other people's suffering, how can we turn to the Ribbono Shel Olam with such a plea? That's what is meant by kol hamerachim kol zman she'ato rachman. If you know what rachamim is, if you are able to empathize, if you are able to feel the suffering of others, harachamim yurachim olecho, then the Ribbono Shel Olam will show mercy to you. Then he'll treat you the same way And in order to save his own suffering, he will save you. And so we see that this whole mechanism of tefillah is so complex and so wondrous that yes, the Ribbono Shel'olam is mis'aveh l'tefiloson shel tzaddikim. The Ribbono Shel'olam loves to make us feel in need of him. And the one way he makes us feel in need of him is to bring suffering to us. But we can make ourselves feel in need of him without that. We can make ourselves feel in need of him through feeling the suffering of others. And through the pain that we feel when others suffer, we turn to the Ribbono Shel'olam. And furthermore, if we are able to be merachamim, if we are able to feel sympathy and empathy with others, if we are able to feel sorrow and pain at somebody else's suffering, we know what it is for Hashem to feel pain at our suffering. And we can appeal to Hashem to avoid our suffering, to prevent our suffering, to remove our suffering, in order that He shouldn't suffer, in order that we shouldn't be responsible for His pain, because He is a rachamon, because He is merciful, and He sympathizes and empathizes with us far more than we are able to sympathize and empathize with others. And if we are able to feel the pain of others, Kavachomer ben Benoishel Kavachomer, how much more so does the Ribbono Shel'olam feel pain at our suffering? And if we are able to experience that and to understand it, we can truly turn to the Ribbono Shel'olam and say, "In lo l'maneinu, if you can't do it for our sake, because we don't deserve it, l'man cho'aseh, do it for your sake, Hashem. Save us from that suffering. Give us the comfort that we need. Give us the ease that we need in order to know that through our wrong deeds we are not causing you unnecessary suffering." And so re-establish a relationship where we're able to relate to the Ribbono Shel Olam with some degree of equilibrium rather than one of indebtedness.